As the court is aware, this is a PIP dispute stemming from an accident that facts are pretty well established. The question is did the injury arise out of the maintenance operation or use of the Love Grove vehicle? And Mr. Kelty was in a tree at the time of this incident with a rope tied to the branch that he was cutting, tied to a pickup truck that Mr. Love Grove was operating.
So you don't think there's any genuine issue of material fact in dispute?
I think if the court, which I'd be happy to highlight the facts of the case, I think if the court looks at the facts as set forth in the depositions, I don't think there is.
Okay.
And I can highlight those for the court in a second. Essentially what occurred is as the tension was being placed on this branch, Mr. Lovegrove accelerated the vehicle harder than he had previously. The vehicle started to slide, fishtail, so to speak, which caused the rope to snap, which caused the branch to boomerang, which caused Mr. Kelty to fall to the ground. The reason why the branches couldn't just be cut straight down is because there were power lines on the property, and the power lines would have affected the branches.
I want to make sure it's clear in my mind. So you believe both sides agree that the vehicle was moving at the time, whether they agree that it was quickly accelerating or whether it was moving at 2 or 3 miles an hour, everyone agrees it was moving. Is that what you're telling
me? Well, the facts are that it was moving, Your Honor. I'm not going to speak for Ms. Urick, who may or may not believe it was moving.
Well, I didn't
moving.
Mean personally believe.
Yes,
would they agree that the record, as you say, is clear that the vehicle was
yes,
moving?
Yes, sir. And I can, in response to your question specifically, the deposition of John Lovegrove, which is attached to the appendix, at appendix page 31, he indicates that the backlash of the tree caused the rope to break. He indicates on page A34 of the transcript that when Tiffany said go, he sped up. He admits that he did not put the vehicle in four-wheel drive. The wheels spun, and it happened because he was on the lawn. On A35, he says that the rope broke because he put too much pressure on the tree limb, and he was intending to take the branch from its normal path of falling down away from the direction of the power lines. Mr. Kelty testified, who was the gentleman in the tree, who was his wife's son-in-law, indicated that the plan was for the rope to be put tight on the branch, for the branch to be pulled away from the power lines. He testified at many different parts in his deposition that the vehicle started to fishtail. It was spinning from side to side. This
okay.
is at A102.
Okay, I don't want to.
I'm sorry.
No. My fault. I just want to get that clear in my mind. It may not be bothering anyone else up here, but I understand your position.
And just lastly, Ms. Lovegrove, who was Mr. Lovegrove's wife, testified that he was driving the vehicle at the time that the branch broke, and he accelerated it, causing the vehicle to move forward. And I think if the court looks at the record in the appendix, it'll be clear that he was operating the vehicle. And I think Judge Carpenter, in his decision, indicated, frankly, that the vehicle was being operated at the time. He specifically says that the use of the vehicle affected the sequence of the events immediately preceding Kelty's injuries. It was highly unlikely, if not impossible, that a person could have pulled this rope with such force as an accelerating vehicle, which caused the branch to boomerang and the rope to snap and Mr. Kelty to fall to the ground. But in terms of the legal argument, Your Honors, I think that the issue is whether or not this arose out of the maintenance operation or use of the vehicle. And the statute, as the court is aware, does not mention transportation purposes. It mentions maintenance operation or use. And I think that we're confronted with what you do with the club analysis, considering transportation is not in the statute. The court is aware that our PIP statute is supposed to be liberally construed, and the purposes of that coverage are to be to benefit injured people who sustain injuries, to make sure that they have full compensation from a motor vehicle collision like this.
If the branches, is it your position that the branches were being transported in the sense that they were not intended to fall directly down onto the power lines, but to take a rather an unnatural path because of the pressure from the truck?
Yes, sir. I think it's clear by all of the people who were there that had the branches, if Mr. Kelty was just in the tree by himself cutting his branches with no rope, they would have impacted the power lines. That's why the rope was placed on it. And what Mr. Lovegrove said in his deposition was, we kept the tension tight. I had my foot on the gas and the brake at the same time. And when the branch broke free, he finished his cut. he accelerated and pulled the branch away.
I thought your position was we should readdress Clue, and because the Minnesota statute is different than ours that was the catalyst for Clue, that we should finally recognize that and take the position on or off the roadway under any circumstances when a vehicle has PIP coverage that a pedestrian or anyone who's injured as a result of the use of that vehicle for any reason, we should simply impose strict liability.
That's not our argument, Your Honor.
Well, that's how I read your argument.
Well, I think what the court is looking at is argument two, and that has to do with the minimum coverage. Under the Gray cases, what those cases say, if you're not an occupant of the vehicle, then if the injury arose out of interaction with the vehicle involving the motor vehicle, under that section of the PIP statute, talking about the minimum financial responsibility laws, at a minimum, even if the court found that you needed transportation, even if the court found we didn't meet the transportation, Mr. Kelty's entitled to a minimum of $15,000 in insurance because this arose out of an accident involving a motor vehicle. That section and the Gray cases talk about the minimum. But the PIP coverage in this case is more than the minimum. It's our position that we don't need to establish transportation. But even if we do, we clearly have use. But if we have to prove transportation, the facts are that transportation does exist because this branch was moved from its intended path had it just been cut a number of feet forward away from the power lines.
Maybe I misread your brief, but weren't you asking us to take this transportation gloss off our analysis and just accept that whenever a motor vehicle is being used in Delaware for whatever purpose, even for a purpose for which it was never intended, and someone's injured, PIP coverage applies?
Well, I don't think I was advocating strict liability, sir. I think what I was advocating is use is what the standard is. And proximate cause is not required under any of the cases. And what there needs to be is there needs to be a causal connection. The vehicle is not just a mere situs of the accident. And there has to be a causal link, not to the level of proximate cause, between the use of the vehicle and the injury. And that's what the cases say. And I think what's interesting in looking back at the decision in Royal, Nationwide versus Royal, which was a 3-2 decision, the dissent was the only case that I've ever found where the Supreme Court has addressed the transportation argument issue. And what the dissent said was that I believe that transportation meant that the vehicle was being moved from one location to the other, maneuvered, I think is what Justice Holland wrote in the dissent. And in, by any stretch of anyone's imagination in this case, this vehicle was being maneuvered. Whether it was going forward, whether it was fishtailing, whether he stepped on the gas and it couldn't go very fast. Mr. Lovegrove himself said he was accelerating 3 to 4 miles an hour when this occurred. So what we're advocating is that you don't need to show transportation from A to B. What Judge Carpenter said was that to show transportation, you need to move goods or people from A to B. And I think that if the court compares that definition of transportation to what Justice Holland said in the Royal case in the dissent as to what transportation meant, they're different. That meant just maneuvering the vehicle. And I think, as was argued last time, we're sort of getting back into what the guest statute meant, what the factual scenarios you could create to sort of get around the transportation argument. And I think that's the problem. The statute doesn't say transportation. It says use and maintenance operation and use of the vehicle. And Justice and Judge Carpenter clearly said that this vehicle was being used. His problem was we have a three-pronged test. There's transportation in it. We have to determine what transportation means. And I think that's the dilemma. I'm not advocating strict liability, but I think that if you look at the use of the vehicle, the maintenance of the vehicle, the operation of the vehicle, we've clearly met our burden of proof, and this court should rule as a matter of law that we've met our burden of proof, and we don't need to go back to try the facts of the case.
Let me ask this more directly. Shouldn't we abandon this kabuki dance and just say, if you our General Assembly intended everyone who's injured with any connection to a motor vehicle at all to be able to recover under the PIP that's applicable to that motor vehicle, and just stop this trying to parse all these ridiculous circumstances like you transport somebody to a scene of a fight, they punch somebody, and somehow that's connected to the use of the motor vehicle. And we have all these absurd fact situations where we dance around and try to fit round pegs in square holes. Why don't we be honest and simply say, if a motor vehicle is involved, you get PIP?
Well, I think the argument you're going to hear on the other side, sir, is that the sky's going to fall any time a car is involved whatsoever. I think there needs to be standards, and the standards...
Each case moves us closer and closer to that direction. Why don't you just admit it?
Yeah, well, sir, I think what the case law, as I understand the dissent in Royal, makes sense in that if there is some causal link between the use of the vehicle and the injury, that's enough. It doesn't have to be proximate cause, and it doesn't have to be the mere situs of the accident. In certain cases where a vehicle crashes into the building, then it's clear that collision occurred as a result of the use of the vehicle. But if a vehicle, for example, is being stopped, as Ms. Yerk said at the last argument, let's say a vehicle stopped and it's on blocks, and in Ferris Bueller they're winding the wheels back that roll back the odometer and it falls off the cinder blocks and someone is injured, maybe that is use of the vehicle or not.
Well, let's say a vehicle is parked since we no longer address these issues based on vehicles on the roadway, it could be anywhere.
Yes, sir.
Parked in a driveway, in a garage, and a child on a bicycle rides up, bumps into the motor vehicle, and is injured. Why isn't that covered?
Well,
the motor vehicle is being used in the sense it's parked in the driveway. Well, we've gotten to the point where it's so absurd the way in which we stretch the statute to provide coverage. Why don't we just admit that PIP is available for anybody that touches a motor vehicle or is injured by the use of a motor vehicle?
Well, again, I think that would certainly favor Mr. Kelty, Your Honor, and I'm not going to tell the court not to rule in that direction if that's the way the court feels. I do think the purpose of this coverage is to provide PIP coverage for as many people as possibly can be somehow, based upon the case law, has a connection to the use of the vehicle. The statute says maintenance, operation, or use.
And do you believe, if that's what the legislature intended, do you believe they've done a cost-benefit analysis to come to that conclusion? That touches on both the availability of the insurance and the price that people will pay for the insurance if we continue this ever-expanded horizon for PIP coverage?
Well, I don't know if they've done a cost-benefit analysis, Your Honor, but I think even under the facts of the law as this court understands it to be, Mr. Kelty should recover. I know this is an unusual fact case situation.
Well,
but this
they're always unusual. Otherwise, they wouldn't get up to this court, I think. And if we can try to parse this out, even though the Chief Justice is suggesting that there's no point anymore to trying to make distinctions, but what would your response be if the car has its headlights on because somebody wants to be able to see something in the distance, and it's not moving, it's not doing anything, it's just got its headlights on, but somebody's coming along and gets slightly blinded by the headlights and winds up in an accident? I don't really care exactly how the accident happens, but my point is the car is there, its headlights are on, the headlights have something to do with the accident. Does that do it?
Well, I think that if the argument is that they're using the vehicle at the time, that is, someone is in it, then I think that would meet the standard, Your Honor, because it is the use of the vehicle.
Why does someone have to be in it? Maybe to carry on with Justice Berger's hypothetical and combine it with mine, somebody is going around, parks their car in their driveway, it's at night, they have the lights on, they are walking around to the back of the house, the lights from the car help them find the back door and put their key in the back door to go into, let's say, the garage or the house, and somebody runs into the back of the vehicle on a bicycle, or just because it's dark, walks into the vehicle and is injured. Under the current progress of our case law, that would be a vehicle being used at the time a pedestrian was injured, and if PIP coverage is there, it applies.
Is someone in the vehicle in your eyes?
Why would that make any difference?
Well, because I think the argument is that
it's being used for the purpose of finding the easier way to get the key in the door to enter the house.
Well, I agree, Your Honor. If the vehicle's, I think if where the court should draw the line is if there's a vehicle that is just simply parked, no one's operating it, no one's using it, it's just sitting there, it cannot, and if it's just the mere situs of an accident, then if a parked car, I'm riding a bicycle and I run into a parked car in broad daylight, I don't think I get PIP coverage for that because...
And there's a logical difference between that and a car that takes somebody to a site, stops, transport is over, use is over, person gets out of the car and punches somebody in a fight, that's PIP coverage.
Well, I think if, as the court has said in other cases, if the injury, there is a causal link between the injury in and of itself and the use of the vehicle, then I think there is PIP coverage. What the court was concerned about in Royal, which is the closest case, I know it's a carjacking case, a car drive-by shooting case, but it's the only time that this court has really analyzed the Klug test. And I think the court found that there was a relationship between the use of the vehicle in terms of the getaway, in terms of how the shooting occurred, and the injury itself. And I think that's what the court should focus on. I think that if it meets the use test, which is what the standard is in the statute, then I think it qualifies for PIP coverage. If it doesn't, if the vehicle's not being used, then I don't think that you could qualify for PIP coverage, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
You want to save the balance?
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, Justices, Chief Justice. May it please the Court. My name is Danielle Urich. I, with my associate, who I'd like to introduce the Court to, Nick Tyler.
Welcome.
Represent State Farm in this matter. It appears from plaintiff's appellate briefs that there are three main issues that have been raised. Obviously, primarily one addressed during initial argument, which I'm happy to address. The first is factually whether or not Klug is met under these facts. That's what it was addressed by the lower court. That was the only argument raised by the lower court. The second is, as I also read it, as Chief Justice Steele did, it appears from the reply brief of the plaintiff that plaintiff is proposing that this court eliminate the Klug test altogether and simply evaluate the statute as whether or not an accident arises out of the use, maintenance, or ownership of a vehicle. And importantly, use has been identified as what Klug defines. However, Klug was used to evaluate 2C of Section 2118, which is even broader, but includes an accident involving a motor vehicle. That's obviously something that this court has run into and established Klug to address. Eradicating Klug, which I will address, will open up the floodgates, certainly contradict all of the precedent this court has set and the factors, and particularly with respect to this factual scenario, which, agreed, is unique, although, interestingly enough, there is a case directly on point from Michigan.
So we should keep the Klug factors from your perspective?
Yes.
And if this truck, if somebody used a truck to tie up tree branches, logs, and drag them 50 yards, and somebody's injured in that process, would PIP benefits apply?
Well, I would leave that to the court, but certainly that would be a more closer scenario to the Klug factors, notably in this case the third prong, which is use of the vehicle for transportation purposes. And I want to clarify something that counsel raised.
Well, would there be coverage or PIP coverage or not under that scenario?
If it is, if the truck is transporting, in other words, hauling property or persons, yes.
Okay. Now, why does it matter then if the branches are up in the air and then being hauled once they're cut?
Well, and there's two answers to that. The first is that's a factual scenario that I don't believe is supported by the record. With the record, and we can get caught in the minutiae of whether a tree branch moved or whether the rope and the vehicle holding it taut, whether the vehicle is on, wheels are spinning or not spinning, you look at the purpose, and that's what Klug now evaluates, is the purpose of that vehicle, and in this factual scenario, was simply to maintain the branch and taut so that when it fell...
That was one purpose, wasn't it? Wasn't there another?
That was the sole purpose, Your Honor, with all due respect, as indicated by all testimony, that the directional, the rope and the taut was intended to hold the branch so that when Mr. Kelty cut it, he would not be cutting it on top of the power lines. Now, if the vehicle and this rope is intended to assist with the direction in which the branch falls, agreed. That, however, using the word transport a branch from that position onto the ground is not using that vehicle for transportation purposes any more than gravity served as transportation purposes for that particular tree branch. So, and the purpose testified by all parties involved in this was not that the vehicle would haul the branches or transport them from that backyard to somewhere else. In fact, Mr. Lovegrove specifically testified when he was asked, where are we going to take the branches?
Well, apart from use, there's also operation. And well, is there any credible argument that could be made that the truck wasn't being operated at the time of the accident?
Well, the statute in particular, as far as A1, addresses, in fact, the use, maintenance, or ownership. Operation, which brings me to another point, if you're looking at some support for why Klug or why this court can define the scope and the intent of 2118 and the broad and liberal coverage, absolutely, that's intended for, operator, 21A, that triggers the mandatory coverage at all, and all the sections of 21A, including penalties if you don't have that coverage, is the prerequisite to that is if you intend to operate or authorize an operator of a motor vehicle. Operator is defined under 2118. An operator is defined as one in control of a vehicle on a highway. Highway is also defined, and defined as a public roadway, public highway, not to include private property, private driveway. Then you have a definition of vehicle as well, which is also part of 2118, another that says you have this mandatory coverage if you shall operate a vehicle. The vehicle is defined as a vehicle intended for the purpose of operating on a public highway. So all the initial, the outset of 2118 and the broad coverages it intends to apply, the intent of that certainly is the operation of a vehicle on Delaware's roadways. That's the first trigger. What this court has done, and even Klug does, and Section 2C of that does, in fact, does broaden it in saying that there's coverage to other persons other than an occupant who are involved in an automobile accident or involved in an accident involving an automobile.
Why didn't, or do we know why, the General Assembly chose the language it did, use and maintenance, as opposed to operation, which would be consistent with the definition of operator? Now, it's certainly logical that the more likely events that would be covered by PIP would be those that occur on either the roadway, which I believe is defined as a little bit more expansive than a highway, that includes the side of the roadway and the ditch that's part of the state right-of-way. That's perfectly logical that that's the kind of coverage you would expect under Title 21. It now has expanded because of the words use and maintenance to off-roadway vehicle involved accidents. And my earlier expressed view is, why don't we abandon any basis for analyses that attempts to be logical and instead simply say strict liability? Because we've moved so far beyond the literal language of the statute and the logical, rational basis for the statute in order to grant coverage to everybody we can possibly think of. Why don't we just admit it and do it?
Well, and I appreciate that, except that obviously I think you've identified that if you don't try to engage both the intent of 2118, which is broad coverage, and as I read it or would interpret it, it does start as if you're going to operate, if you're an operator, which is defined, then here's the minimum coverage. I think that it does expand it to others so that there is a fuller, greater, more liberal protection to others who may be injured by a vehicle, off-road, on-road. But then it goes on to say it has to be an accident involving an automobile accident. If there are no parameters, no limitations whatsoever, taking all precedent from this court, and Delaware courts and the courts that this court has followed as analogous situations, then any circumstance, you don't need proximate cause, the vehicle need not be on. You can be playing baseball and a kid uses vehicle, as we used to do when I grew up, first base was the Vega in the circle. And if there's an injury because the kid runs into that Vega, that does not take this out of, and there's PIP coverage.
That's a good example. Somebody drives to the softball game, parks their car some distance from the third baseline. There's a foul ball hit over third base, the third baseman intent on the ball. But was a former passenger in that car, catches the foul fly and slams into the car and is injured. That's PIP coverage.
Well, and passenger is it wouldn't be necessary, at least in absence of Krug evaluations.
I just added that for the fun of it.
Well, and I appreciate that, and I do think that the passenger is relevant under the Klug analysis to the extent that if you were going to evaluate, well, that vehicle transported that passenger to the softball game. But I think in my scenario, take that, there was no movement of the vehicle whatsoever. The car had been parked there, isn't even used, isn't even operated on the highway. It's in the circle, it's our team's first base. Now,
but my point is, haven't we reached the point in our case law where we have grafted onto the statute coverage in exactly that third base foul ball collision between player and car that was there for the purpose of facilitating the softball game?
No, you have not. Now, if you eliminate the Klug factors or you accept plaintiff's contentions or appellant's contentions as far as whether or not this scenario falls under use or an accident involving the accident, then you would do that. But the precedent from this court, the majority of them, in fact, the decisions from this court that used Klug analysis, in fact, denied coverage. So, and the other analysis that included by this court in both Royal, the Royal decision, in the Buckingham decision, in the Sanchez decision, all also articulated the fact that you have to evaluate the inherent use or the intent or purpose of the motor vehicle. Also, each of those referenced whether or not this really falls within what is contemplated under 2118, a quote-unquote automobile accident. So certainly this court has already set those parameters, as broad as the results may be. By no means should this case or this factual scenario or the elimination of Klug, if that does occur, then all of those cases are eliminated. These decisions in Royal, whether or not there was transportation, whether or not there was a significant intervening event or act to interfere with any causal link, whether or not the vehicle was an active accessory or not, all of that becomes moot, irrelevant. And I think should that scenario occur, should Klug not be continued to be followed by this court, as it has done, that then you do have that open floodgates of there's no connection necessary.
Address the point that's made in the other side's brief that, after all, Klug comes from Minnesota. The Minnesota statute is different than ours. And for that reason, we, in effect, made a mistake by adding transportation as a point of analysis to determine use, that we should just limit it to use. And in this situation, whether you believe anything was being transported or not from point A to point B, there was definitely a pickup truck that was being used, and the use of that pickup truck causally injured someone.
Yes. Now, counsel, I've not heard point out the real discrepancies between Minnesota that is so different from our statute, first of all. But second of all, the Klug analysis is consistent with our statute, regardless of whether it's consistent with Minnesota's. It complies with and comports with the intended scope of 2118A, as I articulated, and even the broader coverages 2C that are involved here. But if you eliminate the transportation element, which is included in this court's analysis and even in the Superior Court's analysis in Wisniewski case that plaintiff's counsel relies heavily on, that it needs to still have some correlation with the inherent intended purpose or use of the vehicle and automobile accident. But if you eliminate the transportation element, then you're looking at only the first two prongs of Klug, which have, quite frankly, under that perspective, no more basis or foundation in statute, in case law analysis, than does the third element of Klug. In other words, as I read plaintiff's argument here, if you eliminate the third factor of Klug or find that you improperly defined use or improperly evaluated 2C, which is it involved a motor vehicle or an accident involving a motor vehicle, then what is your basis for also including in all of this court's prior analyses whether or not there was, whether the vehicle was an active accessory, whether or not there was an act of significant independent interference? None of that would be relevant.
Is there any significance to the fact that Royal was decided in 1997 and the General Assembly has not acted in any way to overturn our interpretation of the statute since?
Absolutely. I think that, and thank you for pointing that out, I think there's actually this certain significance in that. In addition to Royal, Klug has been applied by this court.
That supports my theory that the General Assembly hangs on our every word.
Absolutely. I would not disagree with that, Chief Justice. But this court has also applied Klug and referenced Royal, as it has by our Superior Court repeatedly as well, in its decisions in Buckingham and Sanchez and in Campbell. And Campbell is really quite analogous to this case as well. And in each of these cases, I want to point out that notwithstanding what counsel represented, those cases do address the transportation element of the prong of Klug. They simply found that it was met in each of those circumstances. But this court in Royal, the court in Buckingham, the court in Sanchez specifically addressed the fact that the vehicle in the course of the events was being used to transport itself or the occupants traveling from one destination to another. So those were met. It was also met in Wisniewski, in which Judge Johnson pointed out that the triggering event was the vehicle operating on the roadway. The fact that it then lost control, veered off of the roadway, was still, it was in the course of transportation.
Is there any requirement of a particular distance? Can it be a foot?
There's no requirement that has been articulated, but it makes a good point that to distinguish the facts here, in all other decisions in which the Klug analysis has existed or even been, the coverage has been questioned, you've had a vehicle that has been traveling on a roadway. Now, whether it is then parked or whether it was at the point of destination of that roadway, this is so far removed from those factual scenarios that if the court were to either eliminate Klug or find that this, because the wheels spun or because the engine was on alone, met the transportation purpose of transportation aspect of Klug, then that opens the floodgates as well. Then it would not matter if its use, it wouldn't matter if it moved a foot, it wouldn't matter if, as both Lovegrove and Kelty said, the wheels were spinning laterally or forward or jerked forward. I think the distinction here is getting caught up in the details that plaintiff and appellant want to make you aware of to try to say this was transporting, as opposed to looking at the purpose for which this vehicle, this truck, was being utilized in all of this event. It was a tool.
If somebody backs down a driveway and rolls over someone's foot and only travels a small distance, that'd still be covered, wouldn't it?
Sure, I agree. Because the vehicle would, at that point, and again, under the limited facts, but at that point, it seems to me that the driver got in his car, intended to go somewhere, started in the course of that travel, and in doing so, whether it was within 2 feet of that travel or 200 feet of that travel or 10 miles into that travel, hit someone.
Well, you've used the phrase, the vehicle was a tool, in your brief and in your oral argument. A tool is a metaphor for something else, and this is a question, not a comment. Is it intended to signify that the people that were attempting to bend the branches so that when they were cut they wouldn't fall on the live wire could have just as easily used a fixed winch on the ground rather than a truck?
Absolutely. And in fact, could have used the truck with the engine off, not moving in any way. And that's the distinction here that plaintiff wants you to, just because there was the presence of a truck alone.
It was fortuitous.
Correct. That therefore falls within the use definition or 2C definition for coverage.
There was a case some years ago, and I honestly don't remember the name or the outcome, to be fair, but I remember the facts because, in my view, they're unforgettable. individual drives their automobile up to the pump at a gas station. It's a prepay gas station. They get out of their car. They walk toward the pay point within the building. They slip on an oil slick, and they're injured. They made a claim that they were entitled to PIP coverage and that the coverage provided on the premises by the owner of the business to business invitees apparently was unsatisfactory to them, so they wanted PIP coverage. Now, under your interpretation of the statute, would they be entitled to PIP coverage?
No, and I think the case you may be referring to, at least it's analogous one from Delaware Superior Court, is Carter versus Nationwide in 1992, and the scenario was precisely the individual was pumping gas, and it's referenced in the Wisniewski case, but it was distinguished from the ultimate conclusion in Wisniewski, which was the vehicle that drove into from the roadway into the house in which coverage was found to exist. The Carter case was distinguished because the person was pumping gas, as you said, walked to the convenience store, and was injured in the course of that walking to the convenience store. Now, without Klug, or with the broad interpretation with no limitations whatsoever of the plaintiff contends, that would be covered under PIP, because what triggered all of this? Well, but for me needing to have to put gas in my car, and but for me transporting myself to that gas station, I wouldn't have been walking into the convenience store to pay for this.
One of the reasons I asked earlier about your colleague about cost-benefit analysis and what the legislature was really thinking about is that particular case implicates other coverage. All these cases come to us as if the individual's destitute. The only way they're going to have their injuries and their medical bills paid for is through PIP. But there are other worldly situations other than driving on the roadway where there is coverage. Now, who should be drawing that line? Who should be considering the implications of the interaction of various forms of insurance?
Well,
or the General Assembly?
Well, both. But I think in this scenario, the court certainly can if it wants to evaluate an equitable resolution, or if something can be interpreted in order to impose the intent of the statute, whether it be coverage or otherwise, to provide coverages for innocent individuals. But there has to be some sort of limitation to that, and that's precisely what Klug accomplishes and those factors accomplish. But I do think that it is the court, and I think that the General Assembly has done so in the way that it's written 2118. And again, at the outset, the broadest, the trigger for the coverage at all is under 2118A, which again, as I've indicated, is the operation or operator of the vehicle, and then expands on that. But it doesn't do so, nor has it done, as Justice Ridgely pointed out, since 1997 or 2005 in the Sanchez case or 2011 in the Campbell case, has that triggered the General Assembly to say, oh, we meant it to be broader than this, or we meant it to cover all. And I think it is important in this scenario that, and not necessarily that the court should base its decision on what other avenues or recourse the plaintiff may have for additional coverage. But it's a good point that certainly there are other coverages here. And in fact, the interesting thing in the Royal case, the vehicle owner, the Mariner, was the driver of the vehicle that was used by the occupant to shoot into the trailer. Mariner actually paid his, Mariner's liability auto coverage paid its limits to the victim who was in the trailer at the time. But I don't think, and this is one of the other arguments raised by counsel for the first time on appeal, is that one necessarily means the other. Well, in the Royal case and in this particular case, there was other recourse and there was liability. And in this case, there was a third-party claim that ultimately was resolved. Again, without admission or waiver one way or the other, but the distinction in this particular case was that liability case was litigated, settled, and it was a different party, different counsel. But in the course of that, the plaintiff also had the advantage of boarding items and specials that is now coming before this court and asking to have been included as PIP. Interestingly, there was no argument under that I'm aware of under the third-party liability case that, well, these are PIP eligible and therefore I cannot board those.
Well, you wouldn't expect a plaintiff to make that argument.
I did not expect that it occurred in this case at any rate. And if the court looks at the lower court's decision and the fact basis, That's the first, now that's the first issue and sole issue on appeal. I appreciate the fact that I believe we're here on banc today because of the other arguments and the plaintiff's request that this court reevaluate Klug and whether or not it should apply. I think Chief Justice Steele has pointed out, although taking a position that why don't we just do this, the ramifications.
Well, I haven't taken a position.
If I misspoke, I apologize.
I'm just asking the question.
Agreed. That the ramifications of it are catastrophic. In this scenario, for example, let's say it was somebody tripped on the road. Well, now that's PIP because there was a vehicle in some way involved ultimately in this accident. I think it's appropriate under the way the statute's written, under this court's Klug analysis adoption of that, in compliance with our own statute. And the factual scenarios in which this court specifically has addressed in each of these cases and our superior court has followed, that there is some scope that can be applied to 2118 while still accommodating the liberal intentions of 2118 for coverage. We'd ask that the lower court's decision please be affirmed. If there are no other questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your Honors, if I may, just briefly. There is no purpose requirement in the statute. There's no intent requirement in 2118. Now my colleague argues that, well, it meant to cover roadways, so everybody that's been getting PIP for the last 60 years in parking lot accidents, they're not roadways. Two cars crash into each other. That's not part of the statute. The statute says what it says. And the only reason why we're here, frankly, is because you'll recall there are three parts of the Klug test. Judge Carpenter said we met the first two. State Farm never appealed that. They were fine with the argument. The only issue is, Judge Carpenter said you got to show transportation, and transportation means moving something from A to B. Now, transportation, as you know, is not in the PIP statute. But if the court looks at how this court defined transportation in terms of Klug previously, the majority in the Royal case never got to the third prong of Klug because they decided that it didn't meet the first prong. But it was discussed in the dissent. And in the dissent, it said that transportation means maneuvering the vehicle. No matter whether we like it or not, Mr. Lovegrove was maneuvering this vehicle. He was in it. He was operating. He was gassing it. He had his foot on his brake at the same time. If he was a DUI and a cop came on his property, they'd lock him up for drunk driving. He was driving this vehicle. So there's no question about that. And I think the reason why we believe that the decision needs to be reversed is even if you think there's a transportation argument requirement here, which we argue that you don't have to prove that, but even if you do, Judge Carpenter's definition of transportation is way too broad, much broader than what this court said, albeit in the dissent in the Royal case. The other thing I want to point out, and the reason why this case is problematic, is Judge Carpenter relied upon the Michigan case, Sefesky. And the Michigan statute is substantially different than our statute. Michigan's PIP statute says that maintenance, operation, or use of a motor vehicle as a motor vehicle. That's what it says. And he, with all due respect, did not appreciate that distinction. That's not in our statute. It doesn't say that. Our statute says what it says. And under 2118C, it says the coverage required by this paragraph shall apply to each person occupying a motor vehicle or any other person injured in an accident involving a motor vehicle. That's what it says. And so to argue that now somehow you have to be using that motor vehicle as a motor vehicle, which is what my opponent is arguing to you, essentially, that's not in our statute. And that's a significant difference than the Michigan PIP statute that Judge Carpenter relied upon. The other significant point I'd just briefly like to make is the facts of this case really are that some transportation occurred. Whether you like it or not, this branch could not fall straight down. It had to be moved, whether 3 feet, 8 feet, 20 feet, through the use of this rope. This vehicle was not being operated as a tool. It was a Ford F-150 pickup truck. He was gassing it pretty good, and the branch boomeranged, which caused my client to fall and sustain injuries. I don't believe, and every time there's an argument about whether it's uninsured, and I submit I've been here an awful lot on these sorts of cases, uninsured motorist cases over the years, the argument always is that the sky is falling. here comes everybody, and I can't imagine that there's going to be lots of people in trees with ropes hooked to the back of a pickup truck falling out and then saying, give me some pip cover.
Yeah, I think you can only win a Darwin Award once.
I would submit you probably could, Your Honor, and it's the first case I've had in 25 years of doing this where this occurred. And again, to answer the court's question, there's no intent requirement. There's no common sense requirement for pip coverage. Is it strict liability? I don't think it is, but I think this facts meet the statute, and I think the court needs to reverse the lower court decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. It's a very interesting argument. We'll take the case under advisement and assess.